This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, August 2nd of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll speak with State Representative Edie Hooten about her decision to withdraw from her re-election bid. One solution to the climate crisis is a pane in the glass. That story and more on This Week in Water. And climate activists will gather at the scene of the Marshall Fire today as part of a day of action, calling on the president to declare a climate emergency. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. And then it's How on Earth? This week's KGNU Science Show examines recent news concerning greater dangers from alcohol consumption, along with a conversation about the science of addiction research. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Lily Noble.
Coloradans concerned about climate change, including Marshall Fire victims, gathered to call for the declaration of a climate emergency. Colorado climate activists will gather today in Superior to call on President Joe Biden to officially declare a climate emergency on a national level. The organizers will join victims of the Marshall Fire at the site of a destroyed home. The event is organized by several statewide climate groups, including 350 Colorado, Clean Energy Action, and Colorado Coalition for a Livable Climate. Speakers will include three victims of the Marshall Fire, as well as Madhvi Chitur, a youth climate activist, and the leaders of some of the state organizations. The demonstrators say a climate emergency declaration would signal that the president is ready to use his full executive power to hasten the transition from fossil fuels to clean, renewable energy. Tabor rebate checks in the mail. Colorado taxpayers who followed their 2021 taxes can expect their Tabor refunds in the coming days and weeks. The Tabor, or Taxpayer Bill of Rights, refunds are issued whenever the state collects more than the state constitutional cap of tax revenue. People who file as individuals will receive $750 checks, while joint filers will receive $1,500 checks. This is the first year Colorado will issue standard checks rather than ones pegged to a percentage. While the traditional percentage-based model leads to higher returns for higher-income earners and lower returns for low-income earners, the new system was adopted to give some financial relief to struggling low-income families. Two Boulder City Council members announced a run for House District 10 after Edie Hooten's withdrawal. Boulder City Council member Junie Joseph and Mayor Aaron Brockett have both declared intent to run in the 2022 race to represent Colorado's District 10 in the House of Representatives. Incumbent candidate Representative Edie Hooten withdrew from the race Sunday. She will be joining us live after the headlines to discuss her decision and her time in office. Coroner identifies mother and daughter murdered last week. The Larimer County Coroner's Office has identified two people murdered inside a home in Loveland last week. The victims were 41-year-old Lindsay Dom and her 16-year-old daughter, Meadow Sinner. Both died from multiple gunshot wounds. The killer was the mother's ex-boyfriend who led police on a chase to Erie, which ended with the gunman fatally shooting himself. Denver's 9 News reports Dom had a court-issued protective order and restraining order against her ex-boyfriend. Dom's four other children were in the home at the time of the double murder. According to a report from Everytown Research and Policy, almost half of female homicide victims in the U.S. die at the hands of a current or former intimate partner, and nearly two-thirds of all domestic violence-related mass shootings end with a perpetrator committing suicide. Boulder County Commissioners to hold public hearing on gun violence prevention ordinances. Gun violence prevention ordinances will be at the center of a Boulder County Commissioners meeting this afternoon. The hearing will discuss 5 ordinances, including one prohibiting the sale and purchase of assault weapons, one prohibiting the purchase of firearms by anyone younger than 21, and one requiring a waiting period prior to the sale of firearms. The full text of the 5 proposed ordinances is available online at boco.org/2022-gun-ordinances. You can also sign up to attend and or comment on the public hearing via a link on that website. The woman found dead near Realization Point Trailhead in Boulder identified. Steve Miller has more.
Boulder County Sheriff's Office is investigating the death of the woman as a homicide. 9 News reports that the victim is identified as 25-year-old Alexis Baca. Baca was from New Mexico and was traveling through Colorado with a friend when her body was found Sunday, July 23rd. Her cause and manner of death have not been determined, according to the Boulder County Coroner's Office. Deputies haven't released who the suspect is, but they believe that the victim and suspect knew each other. Deputies said just before 10 a.m. Sunday, July 23rd, they got a call about a possible deceased person near the Realization Point Trailhead, a Boulder open space in Mountain Park's property west of the city. When first responders arrived, they found the woman's body near the trailhead just off the road. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
After years of lobbying, residents in Gun Barrel have saved a prairie dog colony. The colony faced termination as a result of a development on a field next to Celestial Seasonings. Instead, developers will relocate the animals to another location. Dorothy Donahue of the Gun Barrel Community Alliance Board, a group of more than 500 members that formed in response to the development, told the Daily Camera, "This is a very happy moment for us to get them all relocated. We've all been on high alert for 2 years just hoping this would happen." The new development, which Boulder greenlit last year, will create 230 apartments, affordable housing units, a cafe, and common space. The weather today will be warm and mostly sunny across the Front Range. The high will be 94 in Boulder, 96 in Denver, and 80 in Fort Collins. Lows will hover in the low 60s and upper 50s, with a low of 62 in Boulder, 63 in Denver, and 67 for Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Lily Noble.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. State Representative Edie Hooten announced over the weekend that she will be withdrawing from her race for re-election to the State House of Representatives. Hooten represents District 10, which includes most of the city of Boulder and Gun Barrel. Boulder Mayor Aaron Brockett and City Councilwoman Judy Joseph have already declared interest in running for the seat. Joining me live is Representative Edie Hooten. Good morning. I believe you're on mute. There we go. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
First, the obvious question, why drop out of the race when you were already favored to win re-election?
Yes, and thank you. And that is an honest and fair question. I think after the legislative session, we had 3 years of passing some very significant legislation for myself personally, and also at the Capitol with the Colorado Assembly. And it's an incredibly time-consuming effort when you're in session, and that goes from January until May. And then during the interim, when we work from our home offices, you're still putting in, you know, 60 hours a week. So it's a lot of effort. And for some of us, the bills that we run require a tremendous amount of work and negotiation, not only with colleagues from your own caucus, but also, you know, with the other side of the aisle. And reflecting on the legislation I had run and what I was hoping to do in 2023 and 2024, and having seen poll numbers and spoken to colleagues, I thought, man, this is going to be really hard for me to get these bills across the finish line. next year. And in addition to that, I have many colleagues who have joined me on the issues that are most important to me that are willing to, you know, carry the mantle for the constituents that I'm keenly focused on. And that is heartening for me. My husband has been retired for 3 years, and so there's a personal reason too. You know, these decisions aren't made in a vacuum. They usually come as a result of multiple factors, and that is certainly the case for me. He's been retired for 3 years. I don't really see him at all during the legislative session. And during the interim, you know, there's a lot of negotiation around vacation time. Where are we going to go? And do they have Wi-Fi? And is it okay, you know, if I have certain hours of the day that I can focus on my work back home? And in addition to that, I have been talking for years to associates in Boulder who have expressed a lot of interest for running for my seat in 2024. And two of them have formally filed. Others are, I think you're going to see them submit paperwork. But I thought, you know, Boulder's got a lot of great talent and people that are eager to serve, some who are currently serving in different capacities, others who would like to give it a shot. Why not give them the opportunity? I've had 6 really solid years. And unless the voter registration and the political climate in Boulder changes dramatically, once you're elected, you have 8 years. You get, you know, you run for re-election, and unless you really screw up or the climate changes significantly, chances are good that you will have the opportunity to serve 8 years. And my predecessors are evidence of that.
So what I'm hearing is that work-life balance was a big thing.
Yes.
The grueling 60-hour work weeks were another issue. Other than letting your successors know, or people who have expressed intent on running for your seat, letting them know about the work-life balance challenges, the 60-hour work weeks, and the unfinished business that you also referenced, what other words of advice would you have for them?
Well, I think it's important to understand, well, first of all, when you're in the legislative session, January to May, you're working easily 100 hours a week. So, and I think your viewers are very politically aware. That's one reason why I tune into KGNU. They know that we had sessions that lasted 24 hours that were absolute marathons. So, and Boulder is a highly engaged community, and they have very high expectations for their elected officials, and be it the legislative delegation, their congressional representatives, city council, county commissioner, they have very high expectations and they're highly engaged. And so you want to be prepared for that. And I think that's the most important thing, because that cannot be said, I would say, for most of the legislative districts in Colorado. The level of engagement that your elected officials have with their constituents is high, and my colleagues often remark on that. So you want to be prepared to give it 120%. You really need to be prepared for that. It is incredibly rewarding when you are successful. The community of Boulder gives you amazing gravitas to run very bold bills that, you know, many of my colleagues don't have the advantage of running. So that is a great advantage for creative candidates who are ambitious on behalf of the values of Boulder. Well, so that is the advice I would give them.
Perfect. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We're running out of time. I've been speaking with State Representative Edie Hooten, who has withdrawn from her reelection bid. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Up next is This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
One solution to the climate crisis is a pane in the glass. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last week, there was flooding in the Midwest and Southeast, leaving 2 dead in St. Louis and at least 25 in Kentucky.
The disasters were called 1 in 1,000-year rain events, but now, because of global warming, scientists say they will become more common. A hotter climate means more moisture in the atmosphere, which can then be released in heavier downpours.
The conditions began over the Gulf of Mexico, where water vapor was injected high into the atmosphere and blown north. Storms that formed linked together like train cars, each dumping over the same area, causing the flooding.
Although fueled by climate change, the storms were different from a hurricane that stalls, as Harvey did 5 years ago in Texas, or a single thunderstorm that unloads. More rain is forecast for Kentucky this week.
As the catastrophic floods were occurring, Senate Democrats took aim at the climate crisis with new legislation that could now succeed because of an unexpected compromise.
The Inflation Reduction Act, spending $370 billion over the next 10 years, will need all 50 Democrats in the Senate, including Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who agreed to the legislation after secret negotiations.
Analysts expect that if passed, the bill could cut U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by 2030 compared to levels about 20 years ago. Experts have said, however, that they need to be slashed in half to avoid catastrophic climate change.
The compromise provides large tax credits for wind and solar, battery storage, and geothermal energy. States and utilities would receive funding to transition to zero-carbon power generation, and the bill also supports wildfire prevention and sustainable farming practices.
Depending on their income level, individuals may be able to get a tax credit to buy a new or used electric car, and a program would be available to encourage homeowners to install heat pumps and solar.
However, to gain the support of Senator Manchin, the new bill would force the government to allow oil and gas drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, and he was also promised a vote to speed up permitting of projects such as a natural gas pipeline in his state.
Some environmental groups expressed outrage over continuing the support of oil and gas operations, one saying it's a climate suicide pact that would fan the flames of climate disasters. But others applauded the bill as the single biggest investment in clean energy and decarbonization ever proposed by Congress.
The Congo Basin in Central Africa contains the second largest rainforest in the world after the Amazon and is considered an essential carbon sink in the fight against global warming.
At the COP26 climate conference last fall, the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, where most of the rainforest lies, agreed to preserve it in exchange for international investment, calling itself a solution country to the climate crisis.
That is until last week, when the DRC reversed course and started auctioning off lands in the basin for oil and gas drilling, saying the decision was necessary to fight poverty in the nation, one of the poorest in the world.
Fossil fuel exploration could endanger not only forests, but also Congo's sensitive peatlands, which store more carbon below ground in soils than what's held by the trees, according to researchers.
In addition, two of the blocks at auction are located in a UNESCO World Heritage Site, a sanctuary for endangered mountain gorillas.
Despite outcry from scientists and environmental activists that the sales could mean game over for the climate, according to the news program The World, funding promised at COP26 has not arrived, and a DRC minister said that tackling poverty is their priority, not saving the planet.
And finally, buildings require a lot of energy to keep us comfortable through lighting, air conditioning, and heating systems. So to tackle the climate crisis, structures need to be livable but demand less from the grid.
To engineer more sustainable buildings, researchers at the University of Toronto took inspiration from the sea, in particular shrimp-like creatures called krill that adjust pigment in their skin to darken it when it's bright out, to protect themselves from UV light.
The researchers wanted to apply the same idea to the skin of buildings, namely its windows, to see if adding pigment inside the glass, exactly when and where it's needed, could reduce energy use.
In a prototype, they put mineral oil between two panes of glass. They then injected water with cells of pigment to parts of the window where darkening was needed.
By adjusting the pattern and size of the cells, the windows let in specified amounts of light and heat as conditions like temperature and the sun's angle changed in real time. The arrangement could also be customized window by window, so a more effective and cheaper solution than, say, motorized blinds or other technology.
Lead author Raphael Kay told H2O Radio that the concept could be used to address the needs of a building's occupants by tinting a room's color to wake them up, be more productive, or go to sleep.
And for kicks, the pigments could create art like the pointillist George Seurat or Vincent van Gogh, who used tiny dots of color to create their famous paintings. One day soon, climate solutions for buildings could be both smart and masterpieces.
That's it for This Week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Colorado climate activists and survivors of the Marshall Fire will gather at the site of a destroyed home in Superior today as part of a national day of action, calling on President Joe Biden to declare a climate emergency. Joining me live by telephone is one of the organizers of the local event, Micah Parkin, executive director of 350 Colorado. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Can you start off by explaining what this National Day of Action hopes to accomplish?
Yes, people across the nation today are joining forces to call on President Biden to declare a climate emergency and in hopes of allowing him and enabling him to use his executive authority to take stronger action to address the climate crisis, both in terms of working to stop the permitting of fossil fuel development on public lands and in public waters, and also speeding the transition to a renewable energy future.
Shifting to the local focus, who will be participating in today's event and where is it and when?
Today's event is being co-hosted by the Colorado Coalition for a Livable Climate, which is a coalition of 45 different organizations working to address the climate crisis, and also 350 Colorado, the organization that I'm with, and Clean Energy Action, Green Latinos, and Save EPA. And it's being held in Superior at the home site of some climate activists who actually lost their home in the Marshall Fire. It's being held at noon there in Superior.
And keeping it at this level of local action, what concrete measures would you like to see implemented at the local level?
Well, it's past time for Colorado to do its part and stop the permitting of fossil fuels, especially oil and gas production in Colorado, which is it's the largest source of precursors for the really severe air quality problems that we have. And it's also our largest source by far of greenhouse gas emissions that are contributing to the climate crisis. So Colorado, for all of our air quality reasons, our climate, you know, doing our part to address the climate crisis, we need to stop permitting additional new oil and gas development, absolutely. And then we need to be transitioning our energy sources as rapidly as possible to clean, now more affordable, renewable energy sources like wind power, solar power, electric vehicles, all of that. It's time to make that transition and to put the investments in to make it happen as quickly as possible, because Coloradans and people across the world are already experiencing the devastating impacts of the climate crisis, and we really just can't afford for it to continue to get worse.
My guest today has been Micah Parkin, Executive Director of 350 Colorado. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Lily Noble, James Swenson, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.